Book the Third, Gore, The Tale of Migory Sow. Chapter 24, A Handful of Cigarettes, A Red Tablecloth, and a Hen. Again, reader, we must go backward before we can go forward. With that said, here begins a short history of the life and times of Migory Sow, a girl born into the world many years before the mouse Despero and the rat Chiaroscuro, a girl born far from the castle. A girl named for her father's favorite prize-winning pig. Migory Sow was 6 years old when her mother, holding on to Meg's hand and staring directly into Meg's eyes, died. "Ma," said Meg, "Ma, couldn't you stay here with me?" "Oh," said her mother, "who is that? Who is that holding my hand?"
"It's me, Ma, Migory Sow."
"Ah, child, let me go."
"But I want you to stay here," said Mig, wiping first at her runny nose and then at her runny eyes.
"You want," said her mother.
"Yes," said Mig, "I want."
"Ah, child, and what does it matter what you are wanting?" said her mother. She squeezed Mig's hand once, twice, and then she died, leaving Mig alone with her father, who on a market day in spring, soon after his wife's death, sold his daughter into service for a handful of cigarettes, a red tablecloth, and a hen.
"Papa," said Mig, when her father was walking away from her with the hen in his arms, a cigarette in his mouth, and the red tablecloth draped across his shoulders like a cape.
"Go on, Mig," he said. "You belong to that man now."
"But I don't want to, Papa," she said. "I want to go with you." She took hold of the red tablecloth and tugged on it.
"Lord, child," her father said, "and who is asking what you want? Go on now." He untangled her fingers from the cloth and turned her in the direction of the man who had bought her. Mig watched her father walk away with the red tablecloth billowing out behind him. He left his daughter. And, reader, as you already know, he did not look back, not even once. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine your father selling you for a tablecloth, a hen, and a handful of cigarettes? Close your eyes, please, and consider it for just a moment.
Done? I hope that the hair on the back of your neck stood up as you thought of Mig's fate, and how it would be if it were your own.
Poor Mig, what will become of her?
You must, frightened though you may be, read on and see for yourself.
Reader, it is your duty.
Chapter 25, A Vicious Circle.
Migory Sow called the man who purchased her uncle, as he said she must. And also, as she said, he said she must, Mig tended Uncle's sheep and cooked Uncle's food and scrubbed Uncle's kettle. She did all of this without a word of thanks or praise from the man himself. Another unfortunate fact of life with Uncle was that he very much liked giving Mig what he referred to as a good clout to the ear. In fairness to Uncle, it must be reported that he did always inquire whether or not Mig was interested in receiving the clout. Their daily exchanges went something like this.
Uncle: I thought I told you to clean the kettle.
Mig: I cleaned it, Uncle. I cleaned it good.
Uncle: Ah, it's filthy. You have to be punished, won't ye?
Mig: Gore, Uncle, I cleaned the kettle.
Uncle: Are you saying that I'm a liar, girl?
Mig: No, Uncle.
Uncle: Do you want a good clout to the ear, then?
Mig: No, thank you, Uncle, I don't.
Alas, Uncle seemed to be entirely unconcerned with what Mig wanted, as her mother and father had been. The discussed clout to the ear was always delivered. Delivered, I am afraid, with a great deal of enthusiasm on Uncle's part, and received with absolutely no enthusiasm at all on the part of Mig. These clouts were alarmingly frequent, and Uncle was scrupulously fair in paying attention to both the right and the left side of Migory Sow. So it was that after a time, the young Mig's ears came to resemble not so much ears as pieces of cauliflower stuck to either side of her head, and they became about as useful to her as pieces of cauliflower. That is to say that they all but ceased their functioning as ears. Words for Mig lost their sharp edges, and then they lost their edges altogether and became blurry, blankety things that she had a great deal of trouble making any sense out of at all. The less Meg heard, the less she understood. The less she understood, the more things she did wrong. And the more things she did wrong, the more clouts to the ears she received, and the less she heard. This is what is known as a vicious circle. And Migory Sow was right in the center of it. Which is not, reader, where anyone would want to be. But then, as you know, what Migory Sow wanted had never been of much concern to anyone. Chapter 26. Royalty. When Meg turned 7 years old, there was no cake, no celebration, no singing, no present, no acknowledgement of her birthday at all, other than Meg saying, "Uncle, today I am 7 years old." And Uncle saying in return, "Did I ask ye how old you were today? Get out of my face before I give ye a good clout to the ear." A few hours after receiving her birthday clout to the ear, Meg was out in the field with Uncle's sheep when she saw something glittering and glowing on the horizon. She thought for a moment that it was the sun, but she turned and saw that the sun was in the west, where it should be, sinking to join the earth. This thing that shone so brightly was something else. Meg stood in the field and shaded her eyes with her left hand and watched the brilliant light draw closer and closer and closer until it revealed itself to be King Philip and his queen Rosemary and their daughter, the young Princess P. The royal family was surrounded by knights in shining armor and horses in shining armor. And atop each member of the royal family's head, there was a golden crown. And they were all, the king and the queen and the princess, dressed in robes decorated with jewels and sequins that glittered and glowed and captured the light of the setting sun and reflected it back.
"Gore," breathed Meg.
The Princess P was riding on a white horse that picked up its legs very high and set them down very daintily. The P saw Meg standing and staring, and she raised a hand to her. "Hello," the Princess P called out merrily. "Hello," and she waved her hand again. Meg did not wave back. Instead, she stood and watched, open-mouthed as the perfect, beautiful family passed her by. "Papa," called the princess to the king, "what is wrong with that girl? She will not wave to me."
"Never mind," said the king. "It is of no consequence, my dear."
"But I am a princess and I wave to her. She should wave back." Meg, for her part, continued to stare. Looking at the royal family had awakened some deep and slumbering need in her. It was as if a small candle had been lit in her interior, sparked to life by the brilliance of the king and the queen and the princess. For the first time in her life, reader, Meg hoped. And hope is like love, a ridiculous, wonderful, powerful thing. Meg tried to name this strange emotion. She put a hand up to touch one of her aching ears, and she realized that the feeling she was experiencing, the hope blooming inside of her, felt exactly the opposite of a good clout. She smiled and took her hand away from her ear. She waved to the princess. "Today is my birthday," Meg called out. But the king and the queen and the princess were by now too far away to hear her. "Today," shouted Meg, "I am 7 years old."